Thanks, Don. Thanks, Regina. That was an awesome teaching. I really, really appreciate it. I do. And I want to speak to that some more, but first I want to play a song. So I'm going to share. Yeah, it's interesting. I was noticing the contrast between how it felt to watch the Fool on the Hill video that Regina just played and in demonstration of what love really is and the total freedom and abandon and lack of restriction. You know, there's no feeling of heaviness anywhere in that. And then to really feel when she spoke about, and I was surprised to have that visceral reaction here in my chest and in my belly, because it made me want to, throw up. But it's just so interesting, the contrast to see what the focus, when I'm focusing on what I know to be the truth of my being, which is what I saw in The Fool on the Hill, and then to focus on this, what feels like heaviness and darkness, the evil. I don't know I have anything edifying to say about that, just how fascinating to see when that focus shifts, the reaction here. And it's coming up in my head. I was contemplating a little bit this morning about the tip that I'll be writing for General Healing Year One for tomorrow, that will come out tomorrow. And what's tomorrow's lesson? It's about gratitude. That's exactly what it is. 1 second. It's 1:11 p.m., by the way. I thank my Father for his gifts to me will be our lesson tomorrow. And I was thinking about how when I meditate, and I mean really meditate, not when I'm just sitting there thinking with my eyes closed, but when I meditate, that's immediately what I feel, right? When I move beyond the thoughts, is gratitude. And I was thinking about, contemplating about how gratitude is really a matter of focusing on what's true. How it's a natural, visceral, again, reaction to encountering what's true. So you can see how, I mean, particularly, and when Regina was talking about her experience with a school shooting of the Amish kids and, you know, evil versus pure innocence, that really hit home for me. And I've written that down to really look at the belief that evil can destroy innocence. I can certainly see how how that's a block to the awareness of love's presence, right? What a contrast that is with just this pure gratitude of focusing on insight, you know, focusing on truth. It blocks, seemingly, the belief that's surely there, or I wouldn't want to throw up when I contemplate it, the belief that evil can destroy innocence. And frankly, I suspect underneath that is the belief that the truth isn't true. Right. So I have an absolute contrast, a very stark, direct contrast between that gratitude that I feel instantly when I am in the presence of truth. And when I'm believing maybe the truth isn't true. And for me, that's an amazing it's an amazing contrast, and so accessible, so tangible, so, you know, right here, dig your teeth into it and see it. It's not some theory out there somewhere. I'm feeling it here. I was going to say two ends of the spectrum, but there's not a spectrum. You know, it's two sides of the coin is more accurate. one of the things that came up for me when Regina was just teaching was because she was talking about parenting and how what most parents take for love is a nervous preoccupation. It reminded me of events in my own life. As a parent, and anyway, I felt to speak about it. I don't know if it's helpful to me, to anybody else, but I felt to speak about it, so I'll do that. And you may have heard me speak about it before. I'm sure I've done it. You know, when my son was, 3 years old, I guess, his father committed suicide. Later in life, my son, I don't know, the research shows that if one parent's committed suicide, or both, that it makes it more of an option for the child, like, oh, wait, I can just take the exit door, right? I think the research came, you know, I verified my fears with by looking at that type of research. But my son had several suicide attempts and long-term depression, and frankly, we had a very codependent relationship, where mama was trying to shore him up all the time. Let's make sure everything goes well. So, you know, here, you want some money? Here, go buy something. So I'm just trying to make sure that he's going to be okay. You know, I'm going to do everything I can to put him in this little bubble so he'll be okay. You know, he wasn't okay. He still had suicidal ideation, right? He still voiced, I think I'll just kill myself. Holy Spirit taught me this lesson very clearly. At the time, I had another cat named Boo. And there was a cat door, Boo could come and go. I'm trying to think now if it was male or female. Isn't that funny? I'm pretty sure it was he. That's so funny. Anywhere where he could come and go as he pleased. You know, on occasion he would be gone for, you know, several hours. And this was when I was making the transition from living the worldly life to, you know, following my guidance. I had quit my job, gotten a divorce. I wasn't going to run for re-election. I mean, all of that. The process had begun. And so I was feeling a little unstable anyway. Aw. Susan had a cat named Boo. Boo too. Sweet. So again, I was feeling a little unstable anyway, and frankly, the cat, as any of you cat lovers may know, cats are they're very loving, very comforting. So I'm all alone in this huge house with my cat, but the cat disappeared and was gone 2-3 days, and I was beside myself. I thought, and this is going to sound crazy, but the thought occurred to me, well, why don't you just pick up the phone and call the cat? I mean, this thought came into me. I know it sounds bizarre, doesn't it? Cat doesn't have a phone. Cat can't speak on the phone. It makes no sense. But that thought was right there. Why don't you do that? And I went, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And but anyway, it got my attention. And so I'm laying there in bed, just really lamenting the loss of this cat. And I'm saying something. I'm doing some kind of spiritual ghosting, metaphysical ghosting, jumping right to the solution without trying to go through the. I said, all I want is the peace of God. All I want is the peace of God. And I went, you know what? That's not true. I just want my cat to come home. That was the truth. I wanted the cat to come home. And soon enough, she came home. The cat, Boo came home. So then a few days later, my son, Josh, was going through a crisis, some kind of crisis. And I felt this overwhelming impulse to pick up the phone and call him. And I went, oh, that's what Call the Cat was about. You know, I had the belief that if I could pick up the phone and call Josh, and maybe he was getting ready to do an interview or something, I didn't want him to oversleep, and I was going to call him, and I was going to go over what his questions were going to be, and I was going to make sure he got up on time, and I was trying to keep him in that bubble, make sure that he was going to be safe. Because what if he doesn't get up and he misses his job and then he's just going to want to kill himself? The connection was clearly made in my mind with that impulse to call the cat and how ridiculous that was, and the impulse to call my son and how ridiculous that was. And when I say we had a codependent relationship, this was the, I mean, that was the nature of it. I was always trying to make him okay. So it was the extreme of that nervous preoccupation. Oh boy, do I love him. Let me make sure he's okay. So I didn't call him on that day. And in fact, that lesson got taken to an extreme. You know, he called me one day and said that he was going to kill himself. And I was on the golf course, and the guidance was continue to play golf. I know. I saw Don's eyes go like, boing. Do you want to say something, Don?
I'm not at a point in my life where I could literally follow that. I am so sorry. I would try so hard if I couldn't. I swear. I hope God, Holy Spirit, never asked me to do that.
Yeah, I hear you. I really do hear you. I mean, and it was like daggone near impossible, really. I didn't play well that day. Well, at least for a couple holes. But no, I was freaking out. I was absolutely freaking out. But, you know, that was the guidance. And when I got through playing golf, we were playing with a group, and then we went to dinner. And during dinner, EMS called and said, we're here with your son, and we're taking him to the hospital, and this is where you can see him. So I went and met him at the hospital, and he had taken something, but he was fine. He was fine. And then he didn't have one of those, whatever, depressive attacks, suicidal ideation. I mean, whatever you call it. He wasn't led to that place for a very long time. But the next time he felt that way, the guidance was to go be with him, but to do nothing. Not try and talk him out of it. You know, not hide all the sharp objects in the house. God, I've done that. So I just went, I went to be with him, and I did speak to him, and I said, look, and this is the freedom. This is the love and the freedom. I said, look, you can kill yourself if you want, but just be aware that neither one of us really knows how the universe works. And I don't know what's going to happen if you kill yourself. I don't, you know, and you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know that you're not going to wake up in some kind of parallel reality that sucks even worse than this one does, right? I mean, you just don't know what the results of that are going to be. But if you want to do that, you have my permission to do it. And that's love, and that's freedom. And I granted him that. And that was the last time we ever heard anything about committing suicide. Yes, Regina says that is love and freedom. Yeah. And really, that was a dramatic symbolizing of... I mean, the whole relationship changed. His life changed when I, you know, when I quit in there, getting in there, trying to figure. It just did. He had the freedom to let that go. He had the permission to let that dynamic go. So, thank you for letting me share that. George.
You know, that reminds me of something. There was a guy playing golf with his buddies, and they were close to the highway, and there was a funeral procession going by, and the guy stood there, took off his hat, covered his heart. And the guy said, "Man, that was a respectful thing to do." And he says, "Yeah, we would have been married 50 years." Just had to tell that, lighten the mood a little bit.
Oh, I love that. That's great. Yeah. I love a good golf joke. Thank you for sharing it, George. Oh, wow. That's freedom. All right. So, didn't quite know what I would share today, but took it as direction, what I heard when Regina was sharing. And what I'm getting ready to share is also on point from, pardon me, what Regina shared. And by happy coincidence, this is the tip that didn't go out for for gentle healing year one because of technical difficulties. So I'm going to share it here. This tip, this contemplation really surprised me because it went somewhere that I didn't think it was going to go. We were reviewing, this is lesson 119, we were reviewing lessons 107 and 108, and those lessons are truth will correct all errors in my mind. And 108 is to give and to receive are one in truth. All right, we'll go to the kitchen with you, Susan. Okay, truth will correct all errors in my mind, and to give and to receive are one in truth. So I asked, what are the errors in my mind? How does truth correct them? What is my part in the correction? And this is the response. Truth is that which does not know I, me, mine. Truth, awareness, is that from which all things emanate. The self-reflectiveness of truth is thus a prism with unlimited perspective. Free to see from all at once, from anytime, or from none. And, you know, that's just, again, that lovely idea of love, truth is freedom. You know, Regina made the point, and Connie made it interestingly to some extent in her tip today about, you know, we love our children, but screw the other guy's kids, right? They're not my problem. What's my kid going to get out of it? Dawn, am I boring you? No.
More. I needed more oxygen to the brain.
I'm teasing her because she was yawning, but that's funny. It's this idea, this self-reflectedness of truth being a prism with unlimited perspective. So it's not just, you know, it's not taking the position, here I am, these are my kids, they're a reflection of me, therefore I have a special love for them. It's like, unlimited perspective. Cheryl, your hair looks real pretty today. And so then this is where we went, which was, again, a surprise. Inner Wisdom said, notice how truth is as described in 1 Corinthians 13. Anybody that's ever been to a wedding knows knows what 1 Corinthians 13 is. But you notice, it said, notice how truth is described. Now, if I had said, notice how love is described, y'all go, yeah, 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 that's, it's about love, right? But Inner Wisdom pointed out that this is the same thing. That this is, that when it taught, when 1 Corinthians 13 talks about love, it is speaking of truth. Interestingly, it just went through my brain that I hadn't, well, and maybe I don't need to, that I hadn't picked this up in NTI, that I didn't look at NTI 1 Corinthians 13. But I'm going to read you 1 Corinthians 13 from the New International Version of the Bible. And remember, this is describing truth. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, truth, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. We're talking about love and truth being the same thing, but it just in those words, I feel the same expansiveness as I did when we watched The Fool on the Hill a little while ago. It's that absolute allowance. And we talked in General Healing Year One a couple weeks ago about what love was. And it's the same. It's the same thing. Absolute allowance. Unlimited perspective. A prism with unlimited perspective. It's patient, kind, doesn't envy, doesn't boast, not proud, doesn't dishonor others, is not self-seeking, is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. It's absolute allowance. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection, as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part. Then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. Back to this idea of love as an emotion. Clearly within that reading, we see that it's absolutely none of that. It's not about emotions. Oh, I love him. I can't stand to be away from him, and I miss him, and what am I ever going to do? That's not what that is. It's total allowance, total allowance. Total faith that everything is exactly the way that it should be. You know, and again, when I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child. That's the love that goes, oh my God, what a ridiculous, I can't live without him. But when we're willing to discover what truth is, what love is, we gain the strength to put away those childish toys. I think that's what the story that I told about my son at the beginning of this is about. You know, I thought love was nervous preoccupation with his state of mind. But I found that wasn't so. I do feel to just glance quickly. Sorry, I'm off the screen. Now I'm back. At 1 Corinthians 13, man, there is a battle going on up here going, you don't need to read that. Don't read that. So let's read it. Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. 1 Corinthians 12, we're getting close. This is fabulous. I thought, you know, this is going to be pages and pages and pages, like four paragraphs. 1 Corinthians, NTI, 1 Corinthians chapter 13. The reason for all things is love. Division is the opposite of love, because division excludes. Wow, isn't that what we were just talking about? My kids, not your kids. I don't care about your kids, my kids. Division is the opposite of love, because division excludes. Love cannot exclude. Love is whole, knowing only truth. Become as an empty shell to know love. Right? And to me, that says, let go of what my ideas about what love is. Let go of my ideas about what anything is, what things need to be, how they should look, what I have to have, what Josh has to have. Regina notes, the empty shell is the fool on the hill. Become the fool. Become as an empty shell to know love. That is your reason. That is your true desire. To look on the world and divide it by judging is not love, and so it is not what you want. Lay down what you do not want and accept joyfully that which you do. And to do this, we really have to let go of our concepts about, just like Regina was talking about a while ago, oh, I should really do that because that's what a loving person would do. You know, what would Jesus do? What would love do? I mean, a lot of people, you know, use that as a mantra. And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know what Jesus would do. What am I moved to do now, right? As I give up my ideas about how things should look. What am I moved to do? What does intuition tell me to do now? I'm reminded, actually, in one of these exercises that I gave to the Teachers of God students in that presenter series, was that expansion contraction exercise where if somebody says, hey, can I borrow your car? You go, you know, your new car particularly, you just shrink down, right? You get that contracted feeling. And it's a fun exercise to do for a while. And I did it for quite a while to do the opposite of the contraction. So if the contraction says, don't hand them your car keys, hand them your car keys. That can go to ridiculous consequences. And again, one of the things I recommended that they do was watch the movie Yes Man with Jim Carrey, because he took that to ridiculous consequences. And eventually, as you know, in that movie, learns discernment, learns to listen to intuition. Instead of just saying yes every time. So when I read this, I'm reminded of my dad who did a similar experiment. He was saying yes to everything. You know, it's just that attempt to really emulate the movement of the universe, right? This open allowance. But again, Dad, like Jim Carrey, took it to ridiculous lengths. And I think they had a homeless guy living in their house and driving their car and eating their food. And I think Susie eventually made Dad get rid of the guy. But it was a fun exercise. Fun for Jack, maybe not for Susie. Become as an empty shell to know love. That is your reason. That is your true desire. To look on the world and divide it by judging is not love, and so it is not what you want. Lay down what you do not want and accept joyfully that which you do. So, yeah, that was the point. Lay down what you do not want. You have to give up what you think love is or truth is or what you think Jesus would do. Yeah. Cheryl notes that that reminds her of the games that Regina plays. She's been playing games as well. It's fun. Sure, why not? It's not all drudgery, right? Just do it a little bit. See what it, you know, Regina's been talking about something similar. And she said that she received this message again recently. Do the opposite of whatever ego tells you to do is the bottom line. Let's see. When you look on the world, you see the reflection of your mind, which makes the world through thought. What you believe and what you accept is seen in the world. There is division in what you see because there is division in your thought. This thought is not love, right? Love cannot exclude, it told us a moment ago. This thought is the denial of love, which is all that truly exists. Oh, look there. Love is truth. To cease denial and see truth, which you truly desire, become as an empty shell. Become the fool on the hill. Let go of thoughts of division that you may see the beauty of your oneness face to face and you may rejoice. So, again, my question was, what are the errors in my mind? How does truth correct them? What is my part in the correction? Well, you know, the errors in my mind are the belief and division, right? How does truth correct them? Well, I don't know. The process. I know that it makes sense that the correction of division is the recognition of the wholeness. And then I asked, what is my part in the correction? So let's just look. I'm not going to read you all of that 1 Corinthians again, but I am going to read you the beginning answer, response to that. Truth is that which does not know I, me, mine. Doesn't know division, right? Truth is that which does not know I, me, mine. Truth awareness is that from which all things emanate. And NTI told us that. The reason for all things is love. Division is the opposite of love because division excludes. Love cannot exclude. Love is whole, knowing only truth. Yeah, and Cheryl says in answer to the question, how does truth correct the errors in my mind? It allows you to see everything with the right mind versus the wrong mind. So, truth is that which does not know I, me, mine. Truth awareness is that from which all things emanate. The self-reflectiveness of truth is thus a prism with unlimited perspective, free to see from all at once, from any time, or from none. Notice how truth is described in 1 Corinthians 13. Love is truth, is happiness, is God, the forever and the absolute. All things point to the great mystery of being. Faith and hope are but signposts to that one great truth. Again, This is responsive to that last line of 1 Corinthians 13. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. So let me read that sentence again. Faith and hope are but signposts to that one great truth. It is here that you must rest. I'm going to back up. It says, all things point to the great mystery of being, the great mystery of being, right? This is the lack of divisiveness. This is the allowance of all things, of anything, of nothing. It's total allowance. The great mystery of being. Faith and hope are but signposts to that one great truth. It is here that you must rest. Seek sustenance, and this you must share. There is no need in truth to be equivocal. And, you know, again, that's something Regina touched on for us a while ago. You know, who am I trying to please? Who am I trying to impress? What am I trying to manipulate? What, you know, where would I equivocate and why? There's no need for that. You know, where would I try to make somebody happy? I don't really want to go, but I'll go to make you happy. Right? You really shouldn't be doing that, but I'm not going to tell you you shouldn't be doing that because I want you to be happy. There's no need in truth to be equivocal. Only me, I, mine equivocates. Tell what you know to be true. Tell what you know to be true. No speculation. And teach from my heart. You know, I don't need to tell you what, I mean, I might tell you what Muji says, or Regina says, but the truth, the power behind the words is when I tell what I know what to be, when I tell what I know to be true, when I'm not speculating, when I speak from the truth of my being. And it says that, what is your experience? Do you believe this to be a universal experience? Why or why not? It's interesting because I didn't go right on and answer those questions in this writing. I do believe this, frankly, to be a universal experience. Well, at least in the first world, whatever world we're in, first world, I'm thinking of first world versus third world countries, right? Where the experience is, hey, am I going to eat today? Oh, good. Oh, yay, I got to eat today. You know, hey, are my kids going to die today? Yay, my kids didn't die today. I mean, you know, just those fundamental needs. Perhaps it's a very different experience. But for those of us who are not on the brink of starvation or extinction, I think my experience is probably, and I hear some speculation in that, but I think my experience is the same one that other people have in their own way. I mean, you know, you start out hopeful and faithful and boy, let's go get this world and let's have an adventure. And then, you know, and then it feels like you're disappointed. The things that you thought would bring you happiness don't bring you happiness. After you've tried, you know, and of Course in Miracles talks about it. After you've in the real alternative section, you tried this road and this road and this road and this road. And at some point you go, oh, maybe it's not out there. And you begin to look within. You know, and why doesn't everybody begin the words I heard in my mind were the emptying process. So it seems like for that first half of the search, when we're searching outside of ourselves, it's more of a filling up process, right? I got this hole in me, and if I can fill it up, I'll be golden. What we find when we hopefully we're fortunate enough to come to the conclusion, the realization that it's not about being filled up, it's about being emptied when we begin the spiritual path, or at least somewhere on the path. And I started out talking about gratitude, and you know, that I am gratitude, and I'm grateful for that grace to realize that no matter what pinnacle of achievement I might gain, that that's not worth that. That's not where truth is at. It's not about filling up the bank account or the garage or the rooms of this huge house. Not this one. This is not a huge house. But it's about emptying. That's becoming the empty shell. To look at what has been valued and to let go of those values. Then inner wisdom says, notice in 1 Corinthians 13, those things you are not in truth. So let's look. Let's see. What's it say? Oh, it does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. It does not delight in evil. Life lived backwards. I just can't see that word without reading it that way. It does not delight in what, you know, this confusion Dawn talked about a while ago. Does not delight in confusion. So notice those things we just talked about that are those things you are not in truth. To whom do those belong? Well, that's pretty easy, right? Is that idea, of a separate self, a personal self, something that can gain or lose. And I guess what comes in my mind as I read that is, you know, it's the recognition that that ego is not actually something. That separate self, that personal self, is not actually something. It's just a bunch of those ideas about, you know, what I need, you know, to be being proud, and you know, and I'll get mine, and boy, ha ha, he got his, and it's just a bunch of ideas, just kind of all stuck together. And I'm finding that to be more and more true as I'm accepting the challenge to look for the self. And I know that that's currently what's up for me because I'm hearing everybody say it. I heard Joan Tollefson say it the other day in a Facebook post. I heard Jack O'Keefe say it in that reading we had on Sunday. I heard Adi Ashanti say it. It's like, I heard Paul Hederman say it. It's like, okay, so if there's a self, how come you can't find it? How come the thing that you live with, breathe every day, are so intimate with, when you sit down and you go, okay, self, where are you? It's not there. There's a bunch of chatter there. These ideas, you know, it gives it an opportunity. It opens it up to it seems like an invitation to thought. But frankly, when you ask the question, okay, self, where are you? There's no chatter. There are no thoughts. It's like when you turn on the lights and the roaches, you know, disappear. There is no solid self. And this is the invitation that I'm being invited to explore. Where is this self? Okay, great. You want to be a self? Show it to me. Inner Wisdom said, look at 1 Corinthians 13. Notice those things that are not, that you are not in truth. To whom do those belong? For whom were they created? What is their function? What is their function? And it seems like we talked about this. Maybe we talked about it. Maybe I was talking about it with Connie after gentle healing last night. Maybe we talked about it in gentle healing. But the question, what is their function? It was certainly part of the reading, actually, in The Untethered Soul. What is their function? To keep you distracted from the truth. That's it. That's all. To keep you from distracted from the truth. All that chatter doesn't matter. Whether you take this side of the conversation, this thought is going, this one, then this thought. Oh, no, I like my neighbor. Oh, no, she sucks. Right? It's just a distraction. There's no truth in it. I got 3 minutes left, so let me finish reading this paragraph from Inner Wisdom, which last asked, what is their function, right? Truth supports no function. Truth supports no function. That's interesting. But is behind all. The reason for all things is love. NTF, 1 Corinthians chapter 13 tells us, truth supports no function but is behind all. This is the truth in which we rest. This is the truth in which you live and breathe and have your being. Let the errors of mind be corrected by seeing them and knowing that these are the creations that solidify your heart and your experience. Yeah, so I'd asked, what are the errors in my mind? And I think we're pretty clear on that. How does truth correct them? Truth corrects them by seeing them, right? I allow truth to correct them by seeing them, but not by running from them, not by trying to hide them. But by, as Cheryl pointed out a while ago, by being open to their correction, right? By not placing my believing, loving attention with them. Let the errors of mind be corrected by seeing them and knowing that these are the creations that solidify your heart and your experience. The concrete becomes ephemeral as you let these creations go. When I quit hanging on to them, they can go. They are, of course, in truth ephemeral anyway. They come and they go. But I have to let them go, to let them be corrected. Remember, seeing is letting go. Amen and blessings. Amen and blessings from Inner Wisdom. Amen and blessings from me. Love you guys. Thanks for letting me share.